for schools, educators, students and educational developments. Dublin City FM.
Hello, you're very welcome to Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney. Later on today's programme...
They like the approach, they like the mystery, the magic that's there, and all of this, of course, is very cleverly cloaking a whole range of basic skills that are built into the class. So it may appear to be about something magical and mystical, but we're really practising basic communication skills.
I'll be bringing you an interview with someone who has been using drama to support children and young adults with Asperger's syndrome to develop their social and communication skills. But first, we go to Barry for the news. How are you today, Barry?
Good, Sean. I've been very well behaved on the chocolate.
Barry, there's lots happening this week. What have you got for us?
Well, indeed, it is teachers' conference season once again, and with the national debate so dominated by the proposed public sector pay deal, the bank bailout and NAMA, you can be sure that the views of the teaching rank and file from across the country will be much sought after in the week ahead. The INTO and ASGI will hold their annual conference in Galway from Tuesday to Thursday. The TUI, meanwhile, is heading for Ennis in County Clare. Inside Education will be attending all three teachers' conferences for the first time. Sean will be covering the Galway conferences, whilst I'll be in Ennis on Tuesday and Wednesday. We're looking forward to meeting as many of our listeners there as possible. So whilst we've got plenty of questions of our own, your feedback regarding this programme is always welcome. So do look us up and say hello. Now, since we'll be there to cover the major debates and ministerial addresses, we leave consideration of the new pay deal to one side for this week and instead focus on the other major education story of the past 7 days, which was the publication by the ASTI of a survey on science teaching in post-primary schools carried out by Millward Brown Lansdowne Research. Now, with politicians trotting out references to the smart economy at every opportunity, the survey's findings regarding the state of science provision in our schools make for very uneasy reading. Since the increased pupil-teacher ratio came into force last September, 10% of schools have dropped Leaving Cert Physics. More worrying still is the finding that 20% of schools are considering dropping a Leaving Cert Science subject from this September. Moira Layden is the ASTI's education officer. She's been filling me in on the survey's findings, starting with the worrying trend of schools dropping physics, and we apologise in advance for the occasional dropouts on the phone line.
Well, physics is really a casualty of the problems that schools have in being able to recruit a broad range of subject teachers because of the very narrow and fixed mechanism of the pupil-teacher ratio. Essentially, the allocation of teachers to schools is based upon the number of students in the school. And because physics is a minority subject in any case, it really has been the first casualty of this increased pupil-teacher ratio.
The survey also indicates that 20% of schools suggest that they may have to drop a Leaving Cert Science subject in the next school year. Given that there won't actually be a further negative change in the pupil-teacher ratio this year, why do you think that we're looking at a further loss in science provision?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that schools, again, as I said, are under very, very serious pressure of what they can provide. And in terms of, I suppose, the skill mix. And as we know, there's a huge amount of teachers retiring this year. There's a very strong push factor working in the system at the moment, which really the authorities, the Department of Education, seems to be blithely indifferent to. So we now have the phenomenon where schools are looking ahead and seeing that maybe the teachers they had on the staff who had the skill mix to teach the physical sciences at senior cycle, they may very well be exiting. And because of the pupil-teacher ratio increase, the amount of teachers the school will be able to take in to replace teachers exiting will be diminished. So it is a very, very complex business, this task of allocating teachers to different sub-areas. And I think schools make the unfortunate decision that the minority subject areas, like art, like music, like the Leaving Cert Physical Sciences, tend to go. And I think this is an awful tragedy from the point of view of the learning opportunities for students, but also from the point of view of the smart economy. You know, it really is extremely serious that an entire government strategy is founded upon the smart economy, the innovation society, the knowledge economy. And they're not just cliches. You know, they have very kind of, you know, they have a serious kind of strategic framework built around them. But if we don't put money into our school system, particularly into the mathematics and science teaching, and taking concrete steps to improve our achievement levels across those two domains, we're in trouble. It's not going to happen, you know.
Now, another area that the survey looks at in some detail is student attitudes to science. And the findings here, I suppose, would give genuine concern. 4 in 10 teachers agree students have a more negative attitude towards science than other subjects. 50% of teachers felt students perceived the subjects to be too theoretical. And 41% said students are unaware of career options in science. This is all fairly negative stuff. Where's it coming from, do you think?
Stuff. I would say two things, Barry, without going on too much. Number one, all of this issues in the take-up, the barriers to a greater number studying physical sciences at Leaving Cert have been well documented in the 2002 Task Force report on the physical sciences. And that report contained quite a wide range of recommendations for how to, in a way, make the physical sciences less theoretical, to improve students' attitude and to put concrete kind of plans in place at school level to try to encourage the students from junior cert science that they would go into the physical sciences. And that really was a very fine report. It's actually for your listeners. It's available for download on the Department of Education website. But it's quite extraordinary that here we were at the height of the boom. We did not implement any of those recommendations except one, and that was that we would bring in a new revised junior cycle syllabus, which we did in 2003. It was our in train in any case. So, I mean, all of those fine recommendations to looking at aspects of classroom teaching practice, looking at the role of ICT, looking at, the value of out-of-school trips and the value of school industry links, school research institute links to make science more alive. This would all have required person power in schools to manage this, to plan it, to do it. Unfortunately, as I said, at the height of the boom, the state didn't think it was important enough to actually heed the advice of its own self-appointed task force.
So it'll be interesting to see if we can do that now that we've moved beyond the boom. Thanks to Barry for this week's news. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. If you want to contact us, you can email insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. And all our programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our own website, which is www.insideed.com. Next on the programme, we're going to hear about how drama can provide wonderful support to students with Asperger's syndrome, a form of autism, in developing their confidence and their communication skills. The programme is a joint collaboration between Aspire, the Asperger's Syndrome Association of Ireland, and Dr. Carmel O'Sullivan. Dr. Carmel O'Sullivan is the Director of Postgraduate Teaching and Learning in the School of Education in Trinity College Dublin. Her main research area is in drama in education, using drama as a way to motivate learners in primary school, post-primary school and in college settings. Since the year 2004, she has been involved in organising the drama workshops to support children and young adults with Asperger's syndrome. I met up with Carmel recently and I began by asking her to tell me about Asperger's syndrome.
In essence, there's what's called a kind of a triad of impairments, and that was established by some theorists called Wing and Gould, Lorna Wing particularly, a number of years ago. Many researchers nowadays will really look at the high end of the autistic spectrum, where we would locate Asperger's syndrome, at deficits in the child's social and communication capacity, and also in terms of their flexibility. So you're looking at a child may experience some difficulties in terms of their social interaction, understanding social behaviour, understanding how to interact with another person, taking turns, eye contact might have difficulties with that. So social and communication would be very interlinked in a way. And then the third area would be really to do with imagination and flexibility of thought, so that the person doesn't have to have a set routine. I mean, that's one of our great objectives in the work that we do. We're trying to increase flexibility so that the child can see, you know, all sorts of possibilities in a situation. I don't just have to do it this way. A child who would have a diagnosis of an ASD, as we call it, or an autistic spectrum disorder diagnosis, That will be one of the main stumbling blocks. In addition to the social and the communication difficulties they might experience, they will have some difficulties with, they have a propensity, a desire to follow a set pattern. It gives them security. It helps them to understand and to handle the world comfortably. And that's a real issue, because if a timetable changes in a classroom, a room has changed, a new teacher, a new seating position, the child feels a little bit threatened or traumatised by that. The security is gone, and they have to, those situations can lead to what we often call traumas or meltdowns in a classroom, and that they would be the real key defining characteristics of high functioning autism.
And to support these students, you organise a series of workshops. I wonder, could you tell me what those workshops involve and how they're structured?
We have children coming to us in five different categories of ages, and they range from about 6 years of age, 7 years of age, up to over 20. And they're categorised then, we take three classes on a Saturday morning for, you know, the junior ages, the 6 to 8 year olds, the 9 to 11, 12 to 14. And then on a Monday evening, we take the teenagers, because the issues are quite different. In essence, the classes are structured around the concept of taking an area of need that we have perceived in the children's development, again looking at the social, the communication and the imagination, flexibility of thought, and there's quite a number of categories there that we will be working on. So we'll take like something as simple as turn taking or maintaining eye contact. A behaviourist approach in terms of interventions with kids with an ASD might focus very much then on demonstrating the desired outcome, so that how to hold and maintain eye contact with someone else, and how to allow for turn taking in a conversation, so there's listening, and they may practice that in a kind of a drill or a rote learning, and there's a behaviour, again the child is praised and given some reward for that. Our approach is probably an experiential approach, whereby we're taking a fictional situation. Now, it's not fantasy. It is. Some fantasy is going off into, you know, kind of science fiction almost. We're dealing with situations that could happen in the real world. Our typical format of a class is that the children will come into us and we share news. And again, that's an important feature of the class, because the children then listen to each other, they'll ask questions, they'll build on someone else's news. And these are clear, you know, social skills we need to develop. After we've had the news, we'll then introduce our situation. I call it a problem, our drama problem. And that could be to do with, it depends on the age. If it's young children, there'll be characters like animals or bears or well-known fairy tale characters. Or with your teenagers, they're pretty much real people, real teenagers that could have had a such and such a problem happen to them. They could be bullying issues. They could even be issues to do with gender, to do with girls, to do with getting on with other kids, teasing, organising themselves, timetable. The whole lot.
You mentioned girls there. Is that because a lot of the students are boys?
That's correct. The statistics would tell us that, you know, the balance is really skewed towards it being a male condition. Now, there is evidence, we'll say, in some of the research more recently, that it's just that the girls aren't being picked up. Girls may have better skills in terms of disguising themselves and staying, you know, kind of behind the scenes in the class. So that is another issue that's not fully understood yet, to the extent to which the girls may present. Now, certainly the statistics would be quite significantly skewed, 1 in 6 or 7 versus, you know, 6 or 7 boys versus 1 girl in the population. But more research recently, particularly Michael Rutter, has been indicating the statistics may not be quite accurate because of girls' ability to mask or hide the condition. So the types of things, it's interesting, with the trust that has developed over the years, the young people, my teenagers, as I like to call them, They are really beginning to ask us, like, why do girls hug you? Why do they always want to talk to you and smile at you? And these are genuine questions, and these are perplexing and puzzling. Sometimes it comes as quite a surprise to the parents that these are the issues the kids bring up to us in class and want to ask our opinion. So we'll talk about things. We'll have kind of talking sessions, as I call them, and then I'll take the issue. And I'll structure up a story about a fictional, a make-believe character. We might call somebody William. And I'll present them the next day and I'll say, OK, guys, I've got a problem for you. I've heard about this character, William. Now, William is 16 or 17, and William is attending school. He's in fifth year. I'm afraid something has happened with William. last week when he was in school, etc. And we build up a whole case history, and I get the attention of the children, and I present the kind of a mystery, a little bit of a problem coming out, and then I'll give them tasks. It's task-based learning. And we're then framed in the class as if we were either his classmates, other teachers, we could be counsellors asked to, give advice. And then sometimes the kids themselves will play the part. I'll say, okay, would it help at this stage if we actually met William? Let's meet William. Okay, I might ask one of the teachers, perhaps, to take the part of William, and we'll, what we call hot seat, we'll bring William in, and I'll have told the kids, now, you're to take the part as if you were his classmates, or if you were parents, or psychiatrists, or whatever they suggest is appropriate. And we'll talk to either the teacher who is in role, pretending to be William, or one of the kids may volunteer very confidently now, I'm very pleased with them, and play along with the fiction. So they're developing a huge range of skills. If you imagine there, they have to do eye contact, listening, taking their turn when someone asks a question, relevance, etc.
And thinking about how someone else feels in a situation.
Absolutely. And in the world of drama, particularly educational drama, we're talking about putting yourself into the shoes of another.
How would these drama workshops be different from regular drama workshops that you might teach with teenagers or with young children?
Yeah, you need to be aware of the condition itself as a teacher, as an educator, as a drama specialist, whatever way you're approaching this, because you must target it to areas of sensitivity that they may have, and you need to be very careful not to push buttons that may elicit different responses. So knowing the condition, being aware of it, allows you then to protect them, allows you to structure the session so that certain issues are handled in a particular manner. You wouldn't have to perhaps plan and exhibit such awareness in a regular class where kids may not present with these types of difficulties. So we would be very conscious initially with a new group of not asking them for close body contact or touch. Even say with the little children, when they start in September and they're new to us, they would be quite hesitant and resistant to actually lining up in a line. They don't want to be in the space of somebody else. If we imagined that we were going through a forest as part of a drama or climbing a castle to rescue somebody, the notion of them actually assisting someone else and reaching out to another person would not always be there. They would not like to have physical touch with someone else. And over time, I structure scenarios that don't threaten them. I'm not in the business of forcing people to engage those issues unstructured. They are very carefully planned in terms of how I can induct the child into a comfort zone where they are comfortable. Actually, let's hold hands because we're going to make a spell. Let's, like, if you hold that guy, we can pull him through the moat to get into the castle. One of the ways that I found that makes sense with young children with this condition is logic. If the request is logical, in their opinion, they will bear it much better. If it makes sense, and I can tell them why I want them to put their hand on someone's shoulder or to hold hands for this activity or to stand close together, and it's logical to them and it's logical to the drama, so they can see if we do this as a group, we have more power, we can persuade the witch or whoever, the wise man, all of those types of things make a difference.
And I get the impression, Carmel, that for general teachers, that they would actually need specialist training to do this kind of work with children with Asperger's syndrome.
Well, to a degree. I mean, I'm always a great fan in terms of you've got to start somewhere. And particularly our teachers in Ireland are extremely well trained, both primary school and second level. And they would certainly have an awareness of the condition now because it would have been taught in special needs education, as again, both at primary and secondary level. So number one, that's a plus. They know about the condition. They understand the triad of impairment. And there's an awful lot more general information available via websites, some very good books, DVDs, etc. So they have the subject specialist knowledge in terms of the condition. And then equally, in terms of primary school, we are training the teachers in the colleges of education on drama methodologies, how to use drama in this educational way. And increasingly, this is happening in many of the second level programmes. The marriage of those two is really what's required. And that is, we're intending to roll out training programmes specifically for teachers who are interested in this area over the next year, is the plan, so that we can bring those two skill sets together.
Carmel, in your classes, there are only children with Asperger's syndrome. But I suppose a more typical situation for teachers would be where there is one or two children with Asperger's in a larger class, you know, with of children. What are the particular challenges that the children with Asperger's syndrome experience in a general learning environment in doing drama?
Okay, I was going to say just in general, obviously, you know, the difficulties they themselves may present with differ because it's a very broad spectrum. You may have some children with sensitivity to noise and that, you know, various sensory issues that when they're in class with 20 other children or 25 other children, space is an issue, their own integral space, etc., following instructions, organising themselves. Those are the general issues, really, that can present difficulties to the child. Now, when you come to drama, those issues are still there. You still have a large group of people, you still have space issues, and you have to handle those as best as you can. What we found is that if the teachers structure the sessions carefully and tightly, it allows a child with an autistic spectrum disorder to be able to shine, to be able to excel, because the logic or the linearity of a class in drama is not the same as it might be in mathematics or other subjects. The logic that a child with ASD is logical to them, it may not be logical to everyone else. In drama, it can be, because there's no right or wrongs. It's all about possibilities, which in its own way appeals quite a lot to ordinary children, but also to the child with Asperger's syndrome, perhaps, because they do like the whole notion of heroes and powers. They like magic and mystery. But if it's structured well, a teacher can capitalise on that. I think it's a misnomer, a misunderstanding, because people use the language of imagination as being one of the defining characteristics that children with Asperger's syndrome have a difficulty with. I've never found that in all the years of working with the children. They have a very active imagination. The difficulty is to find a way to bring that out and capitalise on it. When they bring it out, it helps the child enormously, and that's why it is great if mainstream teachers and classrooms can give this a go. It allows them to see possibilities in their own lives, how to face challenges, how to resolve difficulties, how to work with others. And again, there's flexibility that the child's logic can be accepted. So if the child comes up with a position that may not fit in mathematics or English or geography, it can fit in drama without having to be censored or upset the child. We can accommodate it, and the other children can accommodate it, and they can see the child with the ASD in a positive light, you know, just as another kid with an idea in the class, and we're working to resolve whatever the drama presents.
And is it the case that children with Asperger's syndrome find it just as easy to go in and out of role as other children, or do they find that more challenging?
With any child with any other specific learning disability or a general learning disability, entering role as a concept, differentiating between fiction and reality, is an issue. It's not an issue for all children with Asperger's syndrome. It is for many. And you have to prepare that very carefully by signalling, if you're the teacher, signalling to your children that you are now, when I put on this apron, or when I stand in this place, I'm going to pretend to be Mrs. Blake, who lives down the road. And I want you to listen very carefully to what Mrs. Blake has to say, because there might be some clues to help us solve the problem. And so it's that kind of signalling very clearly when you're going into role, and then equally when you come out of role, making that very clear as well. You say, OK, now I'm back to being teacher. I was pretending to be Mrs. Blake. What did you hear Mrs. Blake say? And it's a continual reinforcement of going in and coming out of role. And I don't use any fancy language. I don't shy away from the basic word, I'm going to pretend. And I think that it's not just an issue for children with Asperger's syndrome. It's an issue for children, again, equally with general learning disabilities, who may be mild or moderate categories, who would be in mainstream schools, you know, and in your class as well. They need to have a clear signalling of what role, or they'll get confused, and that's not fair. That will add to trauma and upset.
Carmel, earlier you said that most of what you do with the teenagers and with the young children in the workshops is drama as process. Why do you choose drama as process rather than drama as performance for working with these youngsters?
The first reason was that process drama, obviously the word process means no more than that, that we're really interested in using the imagination, the imaginary world, the fictional world, almost as a rehearsal space to try things out, to practice. So I'm more interested in the actual working together as a group, developing the types of skills I was talking about, rather than working in a very directed way. Because if you're working towards the production of a performance, be that for yourselves, because you may equally put on a performance for your own group and video it and show it, or just even to have the fun of doing it. There's a lot of preparation there, and it becomes very teacher directed, and I found that to be the case even in our own practice. Sometimes the kids are quite keen on making up ads, advertisements, and we do that in class for a bit of light relief, and then we show them, we go into groups, we break up into groups, and it involves a lot of humour again, which is a very good skill to practice for the kids, and they enjoy that. But if you have too much emphasis on performance and taking away the process, it means that the teacher is doing more of the work because they have to organise the children. They're practising themselves more than the child. And I want the children to be taking as much ownership and, I suppose, democratic agency for their own development, that they themselves are doing a lot of the talking, a lot of the decision making. In fact, one of the things I find useful about the process drama is that the teacher can disempower herself. You're not quite sure. So if they might say to me, Mrs. Blake said, actually, that at 12 o'clock she saw Mr. O'Brien coming down and he was carrying a big black bag in his hand. And actually, there was a dog walking beside him. Now, they might be expecting me to pass judgment on that observation. And I might say, oh, did she really? Oh, gosh, I don't know what that means now. I'm not sure about that. So I can be very speculative and leave open the opportunity for them to come back into the conversation and to have their say. Now, initially, in the early days, say for people who might be listening to this conversation that you and I are having, they might be saying, oh my goodness, my child in my class, or my child, if you're a parent, they may not have that skill set. But some of them do from the beginning, and others develop it. Our research has shown a considerable improvement in all children's ability to engage in the imaginary world, engage in discussion with others over time. So initially, if I leave a little gap when I ask a question, it's not a direct question, it's a speculation. Gosh, I wonder about that. And I'll pause. I may get some answers, and if I do, I'll take them. And if I don't, I'll say, well, why don't we try? So I'm not going to leave an uncomfortable space, but I'll leave a moment and I'll build on that moment over time to allow their voice to be heard, to allow their logic to come in. And the beauty of over time, the drama is initially we may have, if we have a class of 8 or 10, we have 8 or 10 different solutions or different logics all being applied. And this is, again, back to your earlier point, where the difference with a mainstream class of children who wouldn't have the condition. Children in other classes may be more flexible. They may allow for Mary or Peter or Donald's opinion to override theirs. My children in the early days may not. Initially, they will want their logic to be heard, etc. And that's a real skill then, to how to balance that, to both motivate the child to keep their ideas fresh, and but also to give and take, which would be that flexibility to allow space for others.
And that was Carmel O'Sullivan from Trinity College Dublin. The collaboration between Dr. O'Sullivan and Aspire Ireland has led to the production of a DVD. The DVD is aimed principally at parents, teachers, occupational therapists and speech therapists, and for all young people who have or who know someone who has Asperger's syndrome. It can be ordered from the Aspire website, and we'll put a link to that website on our own. Aspire will be hosting a special Parents' Day on Saturday the 24th of April in the Mount Herbert Hotel in Dublin. That's it for this week's programme. Thanks to our guest, Carmel O'Sullivan. To hear this programme again or any previous programme, you can log on to www.insideed.com or to iTunes. Until the same time next week, when Barry Hennessy and I will be bringing you our reports from the teachers' conferences, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening. Stand by for Emmett and Ali with Up and Down, the Urban Music Show.